The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Well, hi again from a nightclub at the end of the world. This is Michael C. Rupert. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. Cool. Happy Sunday. I am coming to you guys tonight from a remote location in Northern California in a structure where all of the electricity is processed by photovoltaics. It's an off-grid location, stored in batteries. And I got to tell you, learning about this stuff is a trip, because this is not an easy thing to do, and it's really interesting to meet challenges like this and kind of feel what they're like. So anyway, let's talk for a minute. I was talking to Gary right at the top, and ever since the movie Collapse came out, I've just been blown away, and I've been saying it nonstop everywhere I speak, everywhere I go, that there are just millions of us around the world, and we don't know where we all are and what we're all doing, and that has been driven home so many times and in so many ways. And we have an incredible guest tonight. His name is Bob Waldrop. He's going to be up in a few minutes after I take care of some business up front here. But Bob's a native fourth-generation Oklahoman who was born and raised on a farm in southwest Oklahoma. He's the founder of the Oklahoma Food Co-op, a co-op which only sells local foods. And he's the director of music and the organist at the Church of the Epiphany of the Lord, and the founder of the Oscar Romero Catholic Worker House, which works in food security. He served on the Migrants and Refugees Advisory Committee for Catholic Charities in the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, as one of the founders of the Oklahoma Sustainability Network. He runs a bunch of websites. But anyway, this guy is real cool. He has groups on Yahoo called Running on Empty. And I think he said it's about 9 years old. Yeah, he's been preparing people for peak oil for 9 years, and 75,000 something messages archived, 7,000 active members, and just an incredible wealth of resources and service. And so he's going to be on with us in a few minutes. But see, these are the things that are going on around the world, all over the place, and that this movement really needs to know about. Because as much as we preach building community to individuals and families out there within the lifeboat movement or the transition movement or the peak oil prep movement or whatever you call it, we need to talk to each other more. We need to build a community with ourselves. And so anyway, there's something else really cool tonight. Transition Towns, USA. About 3 weeks ago, we had Scott McEwen and Joanne Poirot from Transition US. One's from LA and one's from up here in Sebastopol. And they're just an amazing effort. And I've been hanging with some people up here, and I just found out that they have a $100,000 challenge grant, and this is a group that started in 2001. 2009, and now they're up to like 73 or 77 initiatives around the country, with more than 20 million people in the population areas at least, slightly infected by this. And they're just doing great work, and they're growing exponentially. And this challenge grant means that if they can raise $100,000 by December 31st, they'll get a matching $100,000. And they're just above 60,000 right now, and it's the end of the year. So, I don't get anything from this. This is all about Transition Towns, and it's about, boy, talk about bang for your buck. This is where, if you've got some money and you can do it, I strongly recommend. You want to go to the website, www.transitionus.org/donate. www.transitionus.org/donate to make your tax deductible contribution, and you'd be doing the whole world a favor with that, because I think we're getting close to the 100th monkey. Anyway, okay, so let's talk a little bit about stuff that's going on. It's like this week I just had this feeling like there are times in a great disaster when a good journalist should do is shut up. I kept seeing the old great black and white archetypal footage, archival footage, excuse me, of the Hindenburg explosion at Lakehurst, New Jersey. I think it was 1937 with this reporter on the scene, and he got to a point where all he could do was stay silent, and that was the best coverage. Let the events speak for themselves, and that's kind of the way it's planned. But a couple interesting developments. New York Times picked up on a piece that had been in Brain Baby. I'll find it here in a second. I'll come back to you. But it was about preparing your children for apocalypse, not living in a world where their goal in life was to get an MBA and go to Wall Street. That was Brainchild Magazine, Parenting Toward the Apocalypse, written about also in a New York Times article on November 19th, which went in the New York Times Magazine. So here's a request for you lifeboat builders out there and those of you who follow this. Help me to find some wilderness training schools for children. I know they're out there. Any kind of preparedness training that's taking place specifically directed at children. I'd love to have them on, if they're doing good work, as a guest on this show. Tonight, if you have questions for Bob Waldrop or me, you can email direct. That'll come to me at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com, lifeboathour@collapsenet.com, and or call in at 1-888-874-4888. That's a lot of eights. Okay, what else? Oh, yeah, this is kind of funny. The International Energy Agency, which I've been writing about for forever, as I started going to peak oil conferences around the world in about 2002-2003, they just released their World Energy Outlook report for 2010, and they threw this chart in there. I think it's the eighth chart in. We have that sort of story linked up on the World News Desk at CollapseNet.com. You can find a lot of stuff there, including a Lighthouse directory that's now about 800 entries, really useful entries, and that's a free service we give, among other things, really good stuff. And for our members, we have the now very handy World News Desk. So anyway, this chart in the IEA report, it shows peak oil. It's a graph. It shows peak oil happening in 2006, and it's just a total clear admission that peak oil happened 4 years ago. And it's like Fadi Barol went from, oh, we're going to be fine, to peak oil. Happened 4 years ago. Oh, I'm very sorry. So hold on. Somebody tell the fool with the cell phone to turn it off. That's me. I'm the host. I'm sorry, guys. Things you don't plan for. Anyway, so peak oil happened in 2006, and the New York Times picked up on it today, and I just look at this and I go, wow. Okay, so it really is time for all of us to get our stuff together, because things are getting very murky, and it's pretty clear to many people now that things are going to change very, very quickly and probably pretty soon. So we got a lot to do tonight. And hold on a second, I thought I turned this off. Okay, I'm live on the air. Okay, great. Someday I'll get this radio show stuff down. Okay, that's the New York Times. So anyway, now let's go on here. The IEA has admitted peak oil. I'm sorry, that one still kind of has got me thrown off. And last is Ron Paul, who is taking over as the chairman of the House Subcommittee on Domestic Monetary Policy. And that means that Ron Paul is going to be in a position where he can and will subpoena the Fed, and he will have, I believe, the support of the Republican majority in the House completely, and which is about to make Ron Paul almost like a world power in his own right. Let's see what he does with it. Let's see where he goes. I've said very clearly on Collapse Net for a while, and in all my writings and in the film, that I firmly believe that the Federal Reserve was going to be insolvent, was going to go bankrupt, and it looks like that's well on the way. My big question, as I keep reading stories that we post on the World News Desk, is as I see these stories saying, you know, Fed is doomed, time to end the Fed, blah, blah, blah. We've called that, but what I don't know is what's going to replace it. The G20 is very unstable and getting more and more unstabler, and currency wars are heating up. There's very little international cooperation. The IMF doesn't have the clout to impose a world currency, which most right now nobody would go along with anyway. So I don't know what's coming next, and that's one of the things we have to look out for. So, all right, that being said, that's how we open the show, catching you up to date. Please go to Transition US and make a donation to help them make that $100,000 before December 31st, because that'll double the money if you do. Okay, I want to talk to this guy from Oklahoma who has just been out there doing the work, like so many people I've been privileged to meet around this country as I've traveled, without recognition, without anything else. And that's kind of the good news and the bad news, because most people don't do it for that anyway. But he's done some good stuff. Bob, are you there?
I am here.
How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. It's a cool, crisp night, and we've got a fire going in the wood-burning stove, and the interior insulated shutters closed on the windows, and had a good meal tonight, and so life is good.
Good. Yeah, that's the way to do it. It's been a beautiful day here, too, and we just get grateful for what we got that's in front of us. You've been at it since 2001, right?
That's correct. I became the moderator of Running on Empty 2 at yahoogroups.com in that year. It actually began as Running on Empty at Yahoo Groups, and there was some discussion. There were about 400 members. This was before I became the list owner. And there was some discussion about whether we wanted to get very much bigger. And at one point, the list owner decided he didn't want it to get bigger, so he closed off the ability to add new members, and then discovered that once you did that, you couldn't reverse it. So he migrated everyone to a new group, Running on Empty 2, and we started adding new members, and I took over shortly after that. He asked for volunteers, and I volunteered.
Let me ask you a question about that, because I started in 2001, and then the names that I was aware of, of the people who had been really sounding the alarms over peak oil, were names like Jim Hansen, Duncan and Youngquist, names that are pretty much forgotten now. But you've been at this long enough. Trace the genesis of this back, of your awareness of this, briefly, before we talk about all the good stuff you got.
Sure. Someone sent me an email with a link to Jay Hansen's website, dieoff.com.
Yep.
And so I went there and I read it, and I remember it to this day. I could not sleep that night. Mm-hmm. It was one of those times that you find something on the internet and you just like are captivated by it. And I was horrified by it. And I lay there on my bed and I was thinking, you know, this is just after the Y2K thing. And I was thinking, okay, you're just getting psychologically upset, this is coming off the Y2K thing, this is not really true, you know, it's, you're just scaring yourself for nothing.
Right, right.
But I continue to read, Jay Hansen had a pretty sensationalistic way of looking at things and writing. I remember he had a graphic that alternated between three very heavy set guys sitting at a lunch counter chowing down on double cheeseburgers with a picture of food riots, and then a picture of someone who had died of starvation.
I met Jay first right as I got into peak oil, and he struck me almost the same way. Absolutely penetrating. I thought brilliant in his presentation and clarity, but I couldn't sleep either.
Yeah.
So we've been at this.
I found some others like Gene LaHare. And the people that came together to form the Association for the Study of Peak Oil, I became involved with the Running on Empty whole thing, and after a while the evidence just becomes overwhelming. I mean, I live here in Oklahoma, and this was the Saudi Arabia of the 1930s, and our oil production peaked years ago. And so we who live here in Oklahoma are actually very familiar with how oil production zooms up and then dies off and trickles away. And we still produce a considerable amount of oil, but it comes from 90,000 stripper wells, which are producing maybe 1 to 10 barrels of oil per day. And believe me, there's a whole group of of small oil companies that very carefully nurture those stripper wells to just keep milking the very last bits of oil out of the ground that they can, and it adds up, and the whole state is honeycombed with pipelines collecting all this oil and taking it to market. And Oklahoma City is not very far from Cushing, Oklahoma, which is at any given time 10% of the United States oil supply is sitting in tanks in Cushing, Oklahoma.
Does the word desperation resonate with you?
Well, yeah. I think that there is a very desperate feel to the powers that be these days, because they know better than anybody that we are exactly one black swan event away from having real problems. I mean, things are kind of moving along.
I think we're right there. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying things are moving along. You know, there's no food riots right now. There's a lot of unemployed, but a lot of people still have jobs, and the system is basically creaking along. But, you know, that could change in a heartbeat. And there's 101 things that could happen, actually, before we get off the phone here, that could constitute a black swan event that could change things very fundamentally.
So how does running on empty, how do your groups, and people pay close attention to this, because this is just a gold mine. Bob, how do your groups help people get ready to deal with these challenges?
Well, one way that we help people is by actually helping them through the psychological impact of getting understanding what's going on. It's very common that people sign in to running on empty when they first come across peak oil, and they're scared to death, and they're worried, and they're emotional, and so we help them kind of calm down a little bit and get some perspective and understanding and grounding, and then people have ideas or they have questions. How can I prepare? And there are people who are willing through the discussion group to share their ideas. And there's a lot of different ideas. I mean, we don't have like a party line. There are some people who think that we're going to devolve all the way down to the hunter-gatherer stage. And
who's we? When you say we.
When I say we, at Running on Empty, we, you know, there isn't like an official party line. I'm the moderator, but I don't enforce some kind of peak oil political correctness.
Okay,
and
good.
So you have a wide variety of people posting there, from people who think we should go all the way back to hunter-gatherer to people who are very conservative Republicans and take a very establishment approach to things. They have food storage and alternative energy, but they're still trusting that the Republicans are going to save the day. And that produces some interesting conversation, because we have others that think the Democrats are going to save the day, and still others who are, you know, either libertarians or socialists. There's a communist. You know, it's actually a very interesting cross-section of public opinion these days. And so when you have a wide variety in this salon-like atmosphere, and people can, you know, without fear, post ideas and questions, and we will debate, and the debate will get very robust, but I do keep a handle on it, and we don't allow personal attacks and belittling and things like that. And so, and over time, we have 72,000 messages in the archive, and I have read every single one of those. And that's one of the reasons why I have such certainty about peak oil, because another thing that happens is that periodically someone signs in who's going to correct us of all of our misconceptions about peak oil, because oil is actually abiotic, or tar sands are going to save us, shale oil is going to save us, or it's all a left-wing green conspiracy, or it's all a right-wing conservative conspiracy, or it's a plot by the, you know. And so then we go through a whole new round of examining our basic premises.
Let's hold it right there for a minute, Bob, because
sure.
We have some other things we've got to move through here. We got a whole hour. If you want to ask Bob Waldrop a question tonight, you can call in toll-free at 1-888-874-4888. Or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. I'll get them, read your questions on the air. Bob, you know I have a band. We had talked about that. Now I'm gonna play what's probably my favorite song off the new White Trash CD double wide.
I love that name.
Of two anyway. And this is what we do once a show, just to remind us that we all have to play.
Right.
So this is a song. That's probably one of the, it's the best dance track we have on the CD double wide. It's called "It Would Be Strange." Don't let the fear turn my ears and eyes off. That's a something I try to remember a lot. It's pretty helpful. That was It Would Be Strange from a band, New White Trash, our band, great band. You can find us at www.newwhitetrash.com. Newly released CD double wide is up there. You can download it. You can order it for delivery. You can help us with a special sponsors edition. We've got some great, great songs up there. Thanks to a lot of really, really talented people and a lot of blessings. Anyway, that's my commercial. But Bob, I always do that in the show.
That's fine.
Just
I'm
change
a musician
the mood,
too,
you know.
And I love the name, by the way. You know, I was born 11 miles from the Red River, and so I come by my redneck at least as honestly as Sarah Palin does. So.
Yeah. My mother's born and raised in the backwoods of West Virginia, so you know. Yep. Anyway, we'll do the West Virginia talk some other time. But
okay.
Anyway, so now we've got about 5 minutes before we go to station break at the bottom of the hour. What can people find if they come to ROE? Aside from the questions about once they know that there's peak oil, once that they understand the collapse of human industrial civilizations happening, what are they going to find out that's going to help them? That's what I want to get out.
Well, I think they'll find a conversation. They'll find friends. They'll find people who think similarly to the way that they do, and they can find ideas and places to test out ideas. People, you know, very often post a message about, well, I'm thinking about doing this. What do y'all think about this? Or where can I find information on so and on whatever? You know, how do I skin squirrels and make soup? And someone's going to know how to do that in our 7,000 members, and has done it recently, and we'll send a message that explains how to do it.
And so, you have you also have printable flyers. Now let's make sure we give out the address for how people find you, Bob. Tell us real clearly how people find you on the web and your groups.
Okay, my energy issues are at energyconservationinfo.org. And I rant with hair on fire about politics and economics at bobwaldrop.net. And my name is spelled W-A-L-D as in dog, R-O-P as in Paul.
Yep.
And you can read my recipes and cookbook at bettertimesinfo.org. And to find the Running on Empty 2, just go to www.yahoogroups.com and then search for Running on Empty 2, the number, the digit 2. Or you can go to the Energy Directory, and we're the largest group in the Yahoo Group's Energy Directory, and so we're first on the list there.
And boy, you got some resources. You also have there, don't you, some printable flyers? I mean, we talked earlier in the week, and I'm looking at this list of, and this is a really clever idea, guys. Everybody listen up. He has printable flyers so that you can build a manual, and they're very quick reference sheets for what to do if. In other words, there's one for disaster preparations on a limited budget, building community during a major disaster, community food projects during a major disaster, food preparation and safety, how to make and use a hectographic duplicator. I love that. I used to call those mimeographs, I think. That's why your fingers turn purple. Hygiene, trash, and human waste, you know, all these printable flyers. Bob, how do people find those?
Those are at energyconservationinfo.org, and there's a link right there towards the top of that first page there to the printable flyers. It's /printflyers.htm. But the reason I wrote those is we never know how this is all going to play out, and it may be a gradual decline over a period of decades, or it may happen fast, and the world can be a very troublesome place, and there could be an extreme civil emergency pop up where, or you know, where Teotihuacan, the end of the world as we know it, happens.
Mm-hmm.
And in such situations, I always worry about, you know, how are people going to react? And people, if they're afraid and don't have any idea about what to do, are liable to panic. And we're also liable to see fascism and various kind of negative things come out. And my feeling is that in such a situation, he who gets there the firstest with the mostest will carry the day. And so my idea with these flyers is you download them and print them, and you make copies now. I mean, I have thousands of copies of the Extreme Civil Emergency Flyer sitting in a box in my closet. And I have about 100 copies of the whole set of printable flyers sitting in another box in my closet. And I hope that they just sit there until I die. But if something does happen, I have them, and I can start leafleting my own neighborhood. I have a list of people. We have a small group, the Oklahoma City Mutual Aid, you know, that meets and has done some scenario planning as to what would happen in Oklahoma City if, you know, the food system broke down and the financial system broke down and the communication system broke down. And the basic, you know, people need instructions. And so here are the instructions, and I mean, it's not the answer to life, the universe, and everything, but if trouble happens, they'll be very useful to have. And I take comfort.
I was a policeman for a long time, and I cannot overstate the value of training, drilling, rehearsing, working things through before a crisis hits.
Exactly.
It just makes all the difference in the world.
Exactly. Bob, and speaking authoritatively. To people who are in a panic thing.
I'm sorry. We were both talking over each other.
Sure.
I wanted to ask you a question. What's your reach? Are you just reaching people in Oklahoma? Do you know geographically how far the internet takes you?
Well, no. Running on Empty goes all over the world. And my whole constellation of websites get about 1 million user sessions in a year, and from 105 different countries. And the most common searches that find my websites are actually hamburger casserole and how to make bread.
You have to stay balanced, Bob. That's important, I'm telling you.
I agree. And they're all interlinked. You know, if you find one, you found them all. And and so that's kind of interesting.
Now, throughout your, I don't want to call it a career, what do we call it? Throughout this journey that we've been on, How much interaction have you had? I mean, we're all kind of, it's almost like we're all kind of discovering that we're all out here now. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yes.
And it just so frustrates me. That's why I started CollapseNet, was to help identify and bring this stuff out, you know, so that we can network better amongst ourselves, because there's so much knowledge out there. I mean, I'm getting contacts from groups all over the world. Transition Towns is exploding. There's just so much going on. I'm feeling really encouraged by all this. I believe that there is a massive awakening taking place on a spiritual level. I don't know how you view that, but there is something very exciting about what's happening right now. You feel that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the old thing about the I Ching, this could be a time of great opportunity as well as great trouble. And in fact, when there is great trouble, there's also great opportunity. You know, one of the things I tell people, hey, you know, if we want beauty, wisdom, and goodness in the world, then we have to live it in our own lives, starting wherever we're at right now.
And I'm sorry, I just missed the station break at the bottom of the hour. Shame on me. Bob, we have to take a break.
Sure.
Or else somebody's going to handcuff us both, and we'll be right back after this.
Listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, this is Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I will be coming to you live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I will bring my background as a physician and as an attorney to help you with a minimal pharmaceutical and a minimal surgical approach to your medical issues. Please come join me.
So to join in on the conversation, call 888-874-4888. Ask Dr. Eisenstein, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Progressive Radio Network.
Are you a conscious college student? If you're interested in progressive news and politics, we want to hear from you. The Progressive Radio Network is looking for radio hosts to discuss college life and the issues dealing with being in a university. Send an email to KaraLee@GaryKnoll.com, K-A-R-A-L-E-E at GaryKnoll.com, or call 646-307-4482 and tell me your radio experience and any idea you could contribute to PRN.
Don't miss out on Dr. Michio Kaku's weekly show, Explorations. Dr. Kaku is the only scientist with his own nationally syndicated radio show. Explorations is the program that explains complex physics with an accessible approach. So take an exploration with Dr. Michio Kaku, Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to discuss topics ranging from space exploration to stem cell research.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
That song is called One Good Reason, from New White Trash. And the the chorus of that goes, "No reason to believe in anything but you." It's a great love song. We like that. Listen, one thing I'll say about New White Trash is that I was up here at an awards dinner last night in Santa Rosa, California, and at my table was an executive with a local radio station. So the New White Trash CD is now in at the Crush 95.9. in Santa Rosa, I think now 96.7, but I think we're going to get some airplay there. And boy, you know, the music business is on its head these days, so we keep doing what we can and keep your fingers crossed for us. You can find us at newwhitetrash.com, www.newwhitetrash.com. Bob, okay, so we're back to this stuff about saving the world and saving lives and laughing and making jokes and doing what we can in very serious times and doing pretty good at it. Within the last 6 months, has there been any kind of a change in frequency, tempo, themes on your sites?
Before the election, in the time leading up to the election, there was an increase in traffic, messages, intensity of posting, emotional responses, and things have kind of tapered off a little bit. Since the election, from the very beginning, there's been an ebb and flow. And ironically, sometimes when really big events are happening, things slow down. It's like we're all just kind of sitting there watching it happen and hardly daring to move.
waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Well, exactly. You know, and things are so uncertain. And so many things have happened that we've expected would happen.
Yeah.
You kind of always, at least in the back of my mind, there's always been this, well, I just hope that I go to my grave and people at my funeral say, oh, Bob was really a great guy, but he was kind of paranoid about some things. And I would much rather that than people saying that he was a prophet before his time and saw this coming. Because if things go the way that I'm expecting, then we are on the verge of just very troubled times.
And, you know, you know, of course, that I'm exactly the same way, that I've spent a good number of years talking about, and so have many, many, many others. That's the other sad part of this. Mm-hmm. The Colin Campbells, the Matt Simmonses, the Richard Heinbergs, the Jean Le Herrers, the Shel Alaklets, the list goes on.
Right.
And it's really disheartening sometimes to watch this stuff unfold. And I don't know about you, but when I find it necessary to say, look, this is something we said was going to happen, it's I'm not doing and I told you so, I'm saying that just affirms our model of what we see coming. You better pay attention. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. If our track record thus far has been pretty good, where are we going to end up at, you know?
Who knows? Hey, listen, anybody out there, if you want to ask Bob Waldrop a question tonight, I think you're all probably just listening really intently, but you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. Lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. That'll pop up here right on my screen. Or you can call in toll free 1-888-874-4888. Hey, Bob. I meant to do this at the top of the show. I had a question that somebody sent in before the show, and it wasn't about you. And essentially, this is a question he posed, and I want to know if you ever get questions like this. He says, okay, man, I got some cash, and if I've got cash, should I buy a house now free and clear, or should I put the minimum amount down and hope everything melts down? And so, do you ever get questions like that?
That is one of the constant debates at Running on Empty, and it has a lot to do with whether we're going to have deflation or inflation. And I tend to I read an Automatic Earth, some places like that, and I tend to think we're heading into deflationary time. And in any event, it's an uneven way going forward. So my feeling is if a person has cash or financial assets, they should get themselves out of debt. Mm-hmm. Because as this thing starts to go down, they may talk about bringing back debtor's prisons, indentured servitude. I mean, there could be some very dark things going forward.
Rolling Stone just published an article recently about these fraud closure kangaroo fake courts in Florida.
Yes,
you know,
I read that.
I love Rolling Stone, and Matt Tiabi, I think his name is Crazy guy.
Yeah. The Bible says the borrower is the slave of the lender.
Yes.
And I believe in liberating slaves.
Yeah.
You know, and in fact, I think, you know, if people can't get out of debt in 2 or 3 years, you know, like their unsecured credit card debts and stuff like that, they should head to bankruptcy court. They shouldn't just mess around. They shouldn't keep throwing good money out of after bad. Yeah. They should just, you know, go down, find a lawyer, file Chapter 7 or whatever they can, and go forward.
The metaphor I'm using now when I speak, and I'm doing a lot of traveling here in Northern California, which seems to be like a very awake part of the world, maybe a Venice of a new Renaissance, let's hope. But anyway, and I'm really starting to say it's time to start casting some of the lifeboats off, meaning that I really think that the most important thing for anybody to do now is to disengage wherever possible from the monetary paradigm, which is crashing, and peak oil is the Siamese twin that comes with that. I would prefer not to be involved at all if I could. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, you know, exactly. I mean, the time to get your skills and to learn how to live post-peak oil is now. While the stores are still open and there's still backup, we should all be trying to grow as much food as we can, storing our own food, coming up with alternative ways of doing our energy. I mean, in 2005, I went through this extreme green renovation of my house, and I built new walls 5.5 inches inside of all my existing walls and insulated both of them, so I have 9 inches of insulation in my walls and 14 in the attic. I tore the south wall off my utility room and put in glass so that I soak up heat during the day, and I also fill it with plants. I have hot peppers and Swiss chard and microgreens that I grow in there during the winter. And our backup heat, we aren't even hooked up to the natural gas system anymore. Our backup heat is a wood-burning stove. And I get all the wood from my wood-burning stove from this neighborhood, you know, both from my own property because I've invested very heavily in edible landscaping. I tell people my retirement plan is as a house with no mortgage that is super energy efficient and cheap to operate, and that has lots of edible landscaping.
And preferably has some loved ones in it too.
Well, yeah, there's 5 people that live here with me, and we have an extended family, and then I'm also part of other additional communities of support, you know, such as the Oklahoma Food Cooperative, such as the parish I belong to, the Oklahoma Sustainability Network. In fact, just yesterday we started a new organization, the Oklahoma Center for Worker Cooperatives.
I love it. See, this is what community is all about, you guys out there listening. This is how it's done, and I'm a reasonable neophyte at this, but I'm just loving it. I'm just digging it. And
Civil society is going to save our planet.
It certainly is challenging, but there was a guy that you and I talked about this week, Bob, from Tennessee, who posted on your group.
Yes,
who had gone off, who pretty much got the concept of peak oil 10 years ago. Or something like that, and he went off and built a doomstead, you know, and was growing his own crops in Tennessee. And tell me if I get any of this wrong, but essentially what he's saying now is that unemployment and collapse is so bad around there, what he has to do is spend most of his time defending himself against people who would be stealing his food. I think he tried to make some community there, didn't he, Bob?
Yeah, he indicated that he tried and hadn't been successful. I know that some people have that experience. That has not been my experience here in Oklahoma City. We started very small with the Oklahoma Food Cooperative. I mean, people now look at the Oklahoma Food Cooperative and it is a really amazing accomplishment. But in the beginning, they, you know, none of us who were there in the beginning knew anything about what we were going to do. Mm-hmm. And we invented it all, you know, step by step going forward, one thing at a time. And now other people can learn from our experience. In fact, they can even have our software that we use free of charge because it's public domain software that we wrote. Mm-hmm. We've been actually very, very successful here locally in developing alternative communities, because the time to build your alternative communities of trust and sharing are before the collapse happens. Yes. I keep saying things like that. The time to build a cellar is before the tornado hits. The time to dig the well is before you get thirsty. The time to create a local economy is before the financial system collapses. The time to grow a local food system is before the famine starts. You know,
simple common sense, isn't it?
Well, it is. And especially with the food system, one thing that I have learned over and over and over again is that the food system does not turn on a dime. And it doesn't happen overnight. I know a lot of people have this idea that somehow we can all just go out and start gardening our front yards and avoid mass starvation. But I used to believe that, but I'm dubious about that now because of the sheer inertia of the present system and the difficulties involved, which is why I just constantly repeat this mantra about grow food now, produce food now. I mean, I live 20 blocks from downtown Oklahoma City. I have 1/7 of an acre, and there are two houses, a driveway, and two sidewalks because I'm on a corner. So my growing space is very limited, but I grow over 100 different varieties of useful or edible plants on my former lawns, 2/3 of which are perennials.
Let me ask you this. Did you start with good soil? Did you have to do soil restoration?
Well, this had been a rent house it was built in the 1920s as a duplex and had been a rent house for its entire life, and it just had a sod garden. And I just built up from there. I used the square foot gardening method, and I built 6-inch little walls to outline beds, and then filled it with compost and straw and shredded leaves, and that's what I've been growing on. And that was been 11 years now, so I have some pretty good soil in those beds.
You do. My guest next week, Bob, is going to be a guy by the name of David Gumpert, who's an investigative journalist who wrote a book about a year and a half ago called The Raw Milk Revolution. And he's tracking all the stuff with regard to food, and we're going to talk about not only raw milk, which I love, by the way, but all of the supposed and sometimes hyperbolic concerns we get about Gestapo stormtroopers coming to shoot us, and that's a lot of pandering right there. But there are some things to be concerned about, and next week we're going to try to separate the ice cream from the BS with this guy. He's a solid in investigative journalist. We'll talk about S-510 and Codex and all that stuff, and really try to find out what we should be concerned about. Bob, what's your take on all that stuff?
I'm worried about the food safety bill, so-called food safety bill in the Senate, because it turns regulation of growing of vegetables over to the FDA, which knows nothing about agriculture and which actually has a long history of being hostile to small growers. They're the ones that force through what they call the HACCP plans, which has caused the shutting down of hundreds of small meat processing plants in rural areas all across the country. If they're going to do something like that, it should be at least in the USDA, which has a history of working with farmers. They keep saying that, we've solved the problems and now the organic people are for it, and that's not true. And I've read the whole bill, and what it does, it mandates that they go through a process of consultation, but it doesn't mandate any outcomes, so they can just post a proposed rule and take people's emails and comments and for 90 days, and then when that's over, they can go and do what they want. And I know lots of small farmers, and they don't have any margin. They don't have margin to do extra bookkeeping and extra testing. A lot of them are organic, but they don't even go through the certified organic process because their margins are too thin for them to do a lot of bookkeeping and testing and things like that, such as are mandated, even if it's being paid for by somebody. So I'm very concerned about it. I mean, it's the kind of foolishness that could shut down the local food system, and I smell the dead hand of very big businesses who are worried about the competition coming up from market gardeners and the organic movement, and they know the fastest way to get rid of us. They can't compete with us, you know, because it's been 9 years since I bought meat in a grocery store, and when I go, I don't even hardly eat out anymore because the food in the grocery stores is so dumbed down, and the quality
terrible.
is you know, that once you get used to local food and good food, healthy food, nutritious food, you're not going to go back.
Let me tell you what I'm seeing out here with regard to this stuff, too. Some of the things that I note is that every time there's a raid on a place that sells raw milk, the result of that, ironically, is that the place's volume doubles or triples right after. There's a very strong backlash against this. And one of the things I document, which I did in my book Crossing the Rubicon, my first book, and what I did a lot of at From the Wilderness, is I document how the government works and how it operates. And we're now on the brink of absolutely unprecedented budget cuts in this country that are going to well, it's going to hurt. This is more than a haircut. This is
right.
Like, yeah. So anyway, that's there. And I don't think, and from a logistical standpoint, I don't see the enforcement budget for this as collapse continues to proceed.
I hope so. Because I
studied this for a long time, and I've worked a lot with U.S. military personnel, and I come from a military and intelligence family. The last time I checked, there were only like 13 combat brigades in continental U.S. or something like that's only enough to protect basic infrastructure, and that's what Homeland Security and Patriot Act is all about. And I don't see enough, because police departments are being cut back everywhere, and I don't see the government being stupid enough at this point to try and take people's food away, because between that and Mortgagegate, you know the American people are going to start fighting.
Well, I hope so. I was very disheartened by the last election and how shallow the rhetoric was from both the Democrats and the Republicans. I mean, I wanted to just barf listening to these ads. You know, people whining about the liberals are going to do this and the liberals are going to do that. You know, and I mean, I'm thinking, well, what do we have? We had 8 years of Republican conservatives, and what did they do? They ran the deficit up. They started two wars, and when the banks got in trouble, they gave them hundreds of billions of dollars. You know, they rained money from helicopters all over the crooks, fools, thieves, and parasites of Wall Street, and that was conservative Republicans. And now they want us to believe that they're somehow different, or the Democrats, you know, are sitting there saying, well, you know, we're really for the people. For the people? Which people? The rich people. That's who they're for. Just like
on the World News Desk at CollapseNet, which is my website, that's on the members' side. We charge $100 a year. It's 27 cents a day. But you get the best, absolutely unbelievable compilation of news stories from around the world every day. We've got some amazing people, and I make comments on it. But what I'm seeing is around the world now, people are kind of having a moment of actual clarity and going beyond Republican or Democrat, and they're going, it's all bullshit. Oh, did I say that on the radio? Excuse me. It's all bullshit. And I'm seeing strong stories, and I'm in communication with people in Australia who are using much stronger words than that,
right.
And all around the world. So Dmitry Orlov, who's a friend of mine and a brilliant guy, who I published it From the Wilderness, but now he's an author and just a great guy. You know, he's saying that we are like at the aha moment, where all of a sudden everybody's going to go, aha, this is all nonsense. It's not working.
Yeah, it was just 2 years from the opening of the Berlin Wall to the night that the Soviet flag was taken down off the Kremlin and never raised again. So once things get going, they can move very fast.
And truly, I think that's where we are. We're down to about the last 3-4 minutes of the show, Bob. Please tell everybody again how they can find your groups Running on Empty. And let me just say before Bob does that you're going to find a whole lot of stuff there. Check it out. The idea is that we share this knowledge that we have, and we let everybody know, all of us who are doing this work together. Bob, how do they find you?
Go to yahoogroups.com. And then go to their search box, which is right there, and search for Running on Empty 2, all one word. Don't put any dashes or spaces in there, and you'll find us.
Cool. All right. So what do you, how do you spend your day? How do you allocate out of 24 hours in the day? Because I have to deal with this myself, because, you know, there are people like us who have been out front a little bit or assumed a job, and sometimes it's hard to get your own life straight. So how do you balance the hours in your day?
Well, that gets complicated, but roughly every day I try to do something outside. in the garden and work or something like that. Every day I try to do some music. I'm a musician. That's how I earn my living, and it also helps me stay sane in the midst of all this. And
tell the drummer it's in G.
That's right, you know. And then I spend some time on the internet. Sometimes quite a bit of time. I, you know, with both because I have a considerable amount of private email correspondence generated from the websites, as well as what comes from running on empty. And I try to do some research every day. And stay productive. And I cook every day too. We do not, you know, I'm not a fast food, and we don't hardly ever eat out. We fix our meals here at home from basic ingredients. And when I go to work, I take a lunch, and so that's important. And then
you also don't you run a food relief organization for people who are hungry?
Yeah, we deliver food to people that are in need that don't have transportation here in the Oklahoma City area, and we do about 350 deliveries every month. And we generally do those on Saturday mornings, and I don't do all those personally, but I organize it, and it takes about 6 tons of food, which we get from the regional food bank. And what we're going to do when the conventional food system collapses, I don't know, but and we'll do something.
That's what we're all going to do, Bob. We're all going to do something.
That's right.
What it is, I think, is most
That's
important.
Right. That's right.
If you were king of the world right now, and you could tell people what you thought everybody most needed to be doing, what would you tell them?
Well, I would tell them to start growing food, learning how to grow food and produce some food. I would tell them to stockpile food. The just-in-time inventory system is deadly. One of the advantages that the Soviets had is that they were used to shortages, and so everybody stockpiled there. So everybody should have food storage, and not just a week or two. They should have 6 months or a year of basic food supplies stored in their house. And I think that the next most important thing, you know, is to look at your water situation and store water, and to think about rainwater harvesting from your structures that you live in, and how are you going to get water if the city water goes down.
And, sounds good to me. Bob, we're running out of time. I'm
sure.
Sorry. We could do this for several hours, I'm sure. You can find also Bob, all of Bob Waldrop's stuff listed in our Free to Life Lighthouse directory at collapsenet.com, along with a lot of other stuff. We're building this network stronger. Bob Waldrop, you're a heck of a guy, man, and I really want to thank you for joining us tonight and sharing with us. And I hope we did you some good tonight.
Well, I was glad to be here, and it was nice to talk to you and get to know you a bit.
Cool, man. Let's trudge this road and see what we can do, and hopefully we'll get something right, man. We'll see everybody next week back here on the Lifeboat Hour. I'm looking forward to it. Good night.